Mini episode 1851 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1851. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ben Chu. And normally, Ben is on in our capacity as the chief hoops analyst for FDH. But when he's not, chances are that it is as a part of our mini series that we've been doing on the streaming industry, which I actually looked this up today to see how far back this goes that we've been doing this, because there's a point that I've been making the entire, I think pretty much the entire time, that should come to pass in the industry. And it finally did come to pass since our recent segment that we did with Simon Applebaum, great FDH Lounge dignitary and proprietor of the Tomorrow Will Be Televised podcast. We didn't do that segment with Simon too long ago, but there have been some big developments since then. We're back here today to talk about those, Ben, and we have been on this. I can answer now the question that I just posed. Since May 2020, you first raised this during the pandemic. You said we should start doing this. We did start doing this. We've been at it that long, and there's a point in particular I've been making for almost that long, and it has now come to pass.
And, I mean, it's going to be even back then, Rick, in 2020, like, we were still in the very infancy timeline of the streaming industry.
Yes, the big now, time streaming industry.
Everyone is full throttle now at this time. So it's really interesting to see a lot of the moves that have been made. And again, there's still a bunch of other moves that we'll probably see happen in the next 6 months or so.
Yeah. And at the time, because we were doing this, I mean, the pandemic was more or less the launch period for you had Peacock, you had Disney Plus. I think that was when Paramount Plus was formed out of the wreckage of, what was it, CBS All Access, I think. So you had all these things happening and a few others that I'm probably forgetting at the moment. And that was something, we're going back to then, I looked at Disney and I said, okay, they got ESPN Plus. I mean, I guess I understand keeping that separate here, but you've already got Hulu. And at the time, again, Hulu, it still had the sort of shards of being the conglomeration that it used to be with ABC, NBC, and Fox, I think. But it was becoming almost exclusively a Disney property at that point in time. And I remember that I said, like, this is weird. Like, you've got a Hulu thing. Now you're bringing in Disney Plus. And it's like, I understand that Disney is more so branded towards the kiddies. And then in recent years, also Star Wars and comic book movies and stuff like that. But I just wondered, because it's like, okay, I guess so, like, Hulu is more so for the adults. Disney Plus is more for the kiddies and the man children that like some of these franchises. Like, it just seems weird. I was like, they should put it all under one banner, because they're not going to be able to do that. In the last couple of years, they were dragged kicking and screaming towards somewhat merging them in the form of doing like bundling and stuff like that. But they have finally ripped off the Band-Aid. Probably about 5 years after I first said it, Hulu is being subsumed into Disney Plus domestically, and then there's some international implications to it as well, because I guess, you know, internationally there's different, you know, ownerships, alliances, whatever. But basically, domestically, that's what I was primarily concerned about. In the United States, I'm like, you're not going to be able to sell two of these some bitches in a world where every major entity is pushing their own one. And by the way, some minor and moderate-sized entities as well.
And I mean, I think one of the big things too, Rick, just overall, is that this had kind of been projected for a while after Disney changed their UI, mm-hmm. just to what it currently is right now. And you saw when they focused in on the tiles of like Disney Plus, Hulu, you know, ESPN mm-hmm. Plus. And again, obviously with ESPN's, you know, streaming service, DTC service coming soon later this, and I guess a couple months now. Mm-hmm. That you're really seeing, like, Disney Plus is going to be sort of the hub of yes. Disney content, of Marvel, of Star Wars, of ESPN, and Hulu. So it's really, I mean, it's not shocking. I mean, I think we all saw this coming. It seems at some point, you know, there is a subset of humans out there who only subscribe to Hulu. But right. I also realize at the same point that that number of users is probably so low that it's a lot easier just to transition them into one UI. Because, again, at the end, when Hulu initially came out, I think all those years ago, in the mid-aughts at that point, mm-hmm. it was mainly a lot of just TV shows with advertising in it. Like, it was one of, like, the initial timeline of, like, with YouTube, Hulu was the next sort of thing. I know Netflix was coming to its own at that time as well, too. But mm-hmm. it really felt to me that at some point Disney, after they subsumed 100% control of Hulu, it seemed inevitable that this was going to happen, because it seemed really weird to me that an existing organization with already an existing streaming service would have two different UIs.
Yes. And ultimately, yeah, I mean, it made too much sense not to happen eventually. I think it made too much sense not to have happened much sooner, but for their part, better late than never. And it comes at a very interesting time, because we're going to be talking about a couple of the different streaming services and developments in the industry since the last time that we got together here to do this, which, like I said, was not long ago, but a number of things have happened. But the big story out of all of it is Disney. We have some other things to talk about as well, but at the same point in time that we're hearing more or less about Hulu being subsumed into Disney Plus, now that ESPN is going to be rolling out their streaming standalone is going to be out there, that's the first ever over-the-top version of ESPN that is going to capture all the Disney or all the ESPN networks, everything that's under that banner, and then some. They have now made the long-awaited deal, long-rumored deal anyways. I don't know how much it's been awaited by football fans, but to subsume the NFL network, the NFL in terms of wise a piece of ESPN. I have no idea how the numbers work on that back and forth. I'm ignorant as to that level of high business, but ESPN taking over Red Zone, which a lot of people are like, oh, no, they're going to ruin Red Zone, which if you look at the way ESPN runs things, I can understand why people think that you're probably going to get like a little box with Stephen A. Smith in the corner of the screen belching out hot takes as Red Zone is going along. I don't think they have immediate plans to do that anyways. But what I did read is that they're going to be able to use the Red Zone name in other ways. They could set up a college Red Zone, for example, if they wanted to, college football. That has been rumored for a period of time, maybe to do that, or maybe to start getting into other entities with it as well. I don't know what else they would do that for. I don't know that the NBA, they probably have to set up a separate rights deal with them. Also, college football, were they to do it, how would they handle it? With could they show highlights of games in progress on Fox or NBC or Peacock or whatever? Also, would they want to, like, hey, here's what you're missing? So if you do a Red Zone on ESPN for college football, the ESPN banner for college football, I don't know how that would work anyways. People are speculating about it already. And then, of course, also taking over the WWE, as much as I hate the term premium live events, because they're what we used to call pay-per-views, but now the premium live events, quote-unquote, are just bundled in with whatever streaming service you get. Had been Peacock, now it's going to be ESPN. And we're hearing now initially that most cable systems that have deals with ESPN will allow you to sign into the new app and be able to get things that way. So the difference between it being on ESPN and being on this app should be negligible, at least up front. Now, everybody loves to get their hand in your pocket a little bit more down the road. But for right now, it's interesting because it's a thing where, in a way, ESPN is sort of declaring war on the cable bundle by finally going over the top. But they're also hedging themselves here. And I was reading some analysis about this where people were saying they don't really want people to drop their cable systems and do this. Right now, they're just going after the cord cutters, which is really very interesting. So, like, for me, I've got a wildly overpriced cable bundle that I'm, like, overdue to find a better deal on. But they're not incentivizing somebody like me to drop that and go for the new service. They'd like me to keep paying my overpriced amount. They keep getting their carriage fees off of that. And then presumably I would get the PLEs as a part of it. So very complicated but very intriguing business details about these big deals they're making, Ben.
Right, and I think the discussion, and we've seen Netflix and also Prime Video do something very similar. Like, you're trying to acquire as much content as humanly possible that will allow them to continue to sell the service. And as we know too, Rick, one of the big things that I think sports fans just know over the top right now, like, while ESPN Plus is a great service, there isn't a lot of real live sports content on that platform that many people would care about outside of the NHL. Right. So this is kind of the ESPN's way of getting into the fray a little bit. And now, as we also probably know, that they're going to have their own ESPN bundle now as part of the package. So It's another way to get more, I would say it's a mix of like casual sports fans or also people who are just looking to save money just in general. So it feels like that's going to happen. And the NFL stuff is really interesting because, I mean, one of the things I know we haven't talked about yet is just, again, there hasn't been a lot of instances outside of maybe the XFL where ownership by a TV network has happened before. And It's going to be really interesting in terms of a lot of the stories regarding the NFL. If, again, I assume editorially nothing's going to really change at ESPN, but you're not telling me that if there's a little bit of an ownership deal going on, that maybe some of these stories that ESPN would have pursued previously would be looked at. And again, there's just so much to unpack there too. I mean, if we can talk about Red Zone as well, because it is, I mean, for most people, the premier scenario to get, like, outside of right now, NFL Plus and YouTube TV, those are the only two that allow you to purchase Red Zone. So obviously ESPN will have some level of that. It's going to be interesting to see, because right now, at least from what I'm hearing, rumorly, is that a lot of the cable systems for the ESPN app have been guaranteed, but some of the streamers like Fubo and YouTube TV do not have an existing deal right now with the ESPN app. So it's going to be interesting to see. But again, we've discussed, I mean, ESPN already attempted to do their own version of Red Zone. It was called ESPN Goal Line. I think it was in the mid-2000s. Going into
yes.
2010s. And they also did it with the NBA too, with NBA Coast to Coast at one point. So
right.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, they saw what happened with Gold Zone during the Olympics. It was very popular. So again, this is also another way for ESPN to also just build on their content library and get more opportunities with more live sports at the end of it, which essentially it feels like the current streaming system, live sports, is literally the only thing that you can really bid for anymore. Because even some of the top movies and TV shows, most producers have a stranglehold on who they're with at this time.
Yes. And there was some note that was made in terms of a couple of these deals here that in terms of the WWE deal, that they only got the 10 quote-unquote PLEs per year. Now, some of these are two-night events, but that there's nothing that goes beyond that. They're not getting the NXT ones. They're not getting the back catalog, which remains on Peacock, but they've been putting it out on YouTube under the identities of WWE Vault, WCW Vault, and ECW Vault. They're long overdue to set up a territories vault also, if you ask me, for a lot of the footage that they've kept under wraps. But anyways, ESPN not getting any of that stuff. They're just getting these live events, which a lot of people will tell you relative to the other stuff, and I might be one of these people, that you'd probably rather have the other stuff. Although I realize that this is where the popularity is, and this is where, again, the eyeballs really come in as far as having these types of events there. And that it is something where there has been speculation that WWE will shop the NXT rights, as well as possibly even bundling in the TNA rights. And supposedly they're helping TNA to get a TV deal, supposedly with A&E, potentially, but one of the places that WWE does business. Long story short, it's one of these ruthless things that you see in big business. They're trying to push TNA, who is now completely under their thumb, completely controlled by them, as being the real number two in the biz, not AEW. So they're using TNA in a weaponized fashion against AEW. And so they're going to be using these other things so they'll be able to get more revenue streams coming. And granted, anything that goes to TNA will go to their quote-unquote ownership, but their quote-unquote ownership is under the thumb of WWE, so it's kind of all the same anyways. And as far as it goes with, yeah, Red Zone, NFL Network, any of that, there was a little bit of back and forth this week. Don Van Natta from Sports or from ESPN, he had objected to some comments from Dan Patrick about this. It was Dan Patrick was bringing up the whole thing of what you call in big business regulatory capture, as far as, you know, folks at the different agencies, whether it be the SEC or whatever. In this case, it's the media. And Dan Patrick very correctly bringing up the whole thing of that, you know, that are they to be trusted journalistically now in a thing where, again, they're completely under the thumb of the NFL as far as how this goes. Dan Patrick points out that the commissioner hasn't been on his show probably in 15, 20 years because he doesn't like the nature of the questions that he's going to get. So ESPN is now essentially in-house media. And that's one of those things where I look at it sort of over a period of time. To me, ironically, Dan Patrick was there at sort of the beginning of the period of when ultimately I think this has been sort of a long time coming, maybe 20 years in coming. You go back as far as, what was it, 2003, the cancellation of Playmakers. I mean, ESPN got the message at the time, we better play ball with the NFL. We need to be in the NFL business. This, to me, is just a dramatic amplification of a decision they made over two decades ago that they need to play ball with the NFL, and they're not so much going to worry about the public perception of journalism.
And I think also one big thing we also have to note with this overall is that in terms of these, you know, the major big four sports in America, pro sports in America, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, all the, at least from what I am hearing, at least from the sources that I've read and stuff that's been told to me, like a lot of these, league-based channels are not making a lot of money right now.
Sure. They're
essentially, it's in most cases, it's a loss leader. We saw essentially NFL Network got their programming pretty much. We saw the Insiders got canceled about, I think, last year at one point, and then a couple of their flagship shows. And we saw also what happened to Good Morning Football going from New York to LA and essentially now being more limited. And it's going to be really interesting to see, because at least right now, ESPN has gone on record and say that they're not touching the NFL Network staff. But again, one of the questions you do have to ask is, will ESPN potentially decide to limit some of these shows and cut costs eventually? Because if we all know, like, even, unless you are a diehard NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball fan or hockey fan, most of the time you're not watching that channel 24/7.
Yeah.
So there are ways you could probably get around with some cost-cutting methods and things to do, but it's just going to be really interesting, too, because I know, and I know this, the deal is not official yet, but I do remember as part of this deal that they will, that ESPN has bought into the lease of the NFL Network studios. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they may use that for, because I know a handful of their NBA shows are out there. There's also, there'd probably be discussions that they may want to move NFL Live into that studio and then save a little bit of money that way. So it's going to be, it's a lot to get to, and we're going to, and again, the NBA is going to go through their own situation, right? Because they still do not know what they're going to do with NBA TV at this period of time, with Turner leaving, I believe, at the end of next month. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting to see. So at one point, I feel like in the grand age of like cable sports, like all these networks were like must-haves, and now it almost feels like these are like feeder broadcasts almost. And these leagues are using it as positive momentum for their daily wrap-ups, you know, gaining information. So it's going to be very interesting. And one thing we haven't even talked about yet, too, was the one of the minor things that wasn't really discussed as part of this deal, but it is going to be really impactful, is the NFL Fantasy shutting down and then being subsumed into ESPN Fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. So anybody that liked that operation is going to be SOL. And it's one of those things, nobody's ever been able to answer this question to me, because when you're talking about the whole deal with the cost of programming and everything like that, when all of these league-operated networks got set up, I anticipated gleefully, oh boy, we're going to get a lot of classic sports. We're going to get NFL Network. Oh boy, they're going to run a whole bunch of NFL film stuff. That's going to be great. Like, you barely can find it at all on there. They've gutted NFL films for all intents and purposes. And this is a thing where I go back to the early days of the FDH Lounge, 2009, interviewing the late, great Steve Sable on the show. And he was giving a forecast that would be unfortunately null and void because he, unbeknownst to all of us, only had, you know, 2.5 years left to live at that point. But as far as and the NFL had already taken control of everything at that point, too. So him and his father were more or less, you know, just advisors at that point, consultants. But talking about that, he anticipated that there would be a whole thing of like, oh, if you're a Browns fan, you'll be able to, like, through NFL.com, you'll be able to pull up any type of, you know, Brian Sipe highlights from back in the day or this or that. He anticipated this entire interactive kind of a thing, that he was painting a picture of a world within 3 or 4 years that never came to pass. And that part of it, I look at it cynically, like, okay, they didn't go with his vision because that was going to cost money, and who's going to pay for it? Roger Goodell said it's going to be a $25 billion league by the time he's, you know, retired as commissioner, so we can't get there if we're giving too much stuff to the fans. But then on the other side of the equation, why are you not showing classic NFL films, showing classic games, showing things that people want? People loved NFL films. I grew up on NFL films. A lot of people did. A lot of people's childhood was watching NFL films. So, like, none of these networks, none of these league-owned networks, MLB doesn't show a whole lot of classic stuff on there.
I mean, at this point, Rick, the only ones that I know for sure are really NBA TV and NHL Network.
They do somewhat. Yeah. Somewhat, but not nearly as much as I would think.
Not nearly as much as they should, no. And, we've also seen...
It costs nothing! It costs nothing,
man! Well, and, I mean, here's the weird irony, Rick, is that, as, you know, was noted in a handful of articles I read about the deal, is that one of the ways that ESPN could hypothetically save money is to show classic games. So,
yeah,
that's going to be... It's going to be really interesting. And, again, too, at least for... Another thing we also didn't mention, I felt was a very good point, is it's going to be really interesting with the gambling aspect, too, because they obviously ESPN is ESPN Bet, and it's going to be really interesting to see if there's going to be much more in terms of, like, the new app user experience with their, you know, with the DTC, how that integration is going to work with the NFL. And again, we've also never seen a league outside of maybe the XFL at that time be a... essentially be a stakeholder in the league, but then allow legalized gambling of the games. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that kind of pans out as well.
Well, and in light of how things are going with MLB, I mean, I'm ignorant as to some of the specific prop bets that, that the ESPN bet has, but, like, I'm imagining a world of, like, will or will there not be an onside kick on the opening kickoff of a game? You know, like, things that one person can control, right? Like, are we going to be seeing more of that in the NFL? And again, the NFL, I'm sure, would be every bit as ineffectual as Major League Baseball in rooting out the thing. Because, again, once you let in gambling like this, anything is possible. And so, yeah, there's a whole can of worms.
And again, the one big thing, too, Rick, was like with the integration of just ESPN Bet just overall. I know it's not nationwide.
Yeah.
But at some point, you're going to be able to go into the ESPN, well, whether it's the DTC app or the other one.
Yeah,
and you'll be able to click through and have that one-touch narrative that you can say, look, I can watch this game right now on my TV, but hey, I also want to make that bet. So, and like, of course, I'll just use an example. Like, if I'm watching a, let's just say, a Jets-Browns game, and, you know, I see Justin Fields has a rushing touchdown, and the game's on ESPN, they can pop up on a screen real quick. What are the odds that Justin Fields is next drive is going to be a touchdown? So it's really going to be one of those scenarios that it's going to be a tricky thing. But again, we within the world of gambling and sports, it's so intertwined right now. Like, it's crazy to think that literally it was only two decades ago where there was literally no pro sports in Vegas, and now pretty much almost all of America has legalized gambling, and now there's going to probably be 4 professional sports teams in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, for any of the ethics folks out there, don't worry, because every time you click through to make a bet, I'm sure that in the 2-point aerial narrow, there will be some kind of, you know, text there, like, you know, danger, gambling can be addictive. Call this number that you can't even read if you have a gambling problem. So, you know, that's the way it's going to work.
But again, this is a big deal, too, Rick, because the integration for sports fans, even though like now we're at the point of like clicking on our phones,
yeah,
and doing something. Think about a scenario where you can be watching a game on your TV, and a prop bet pops up that says whatever. You press a button, you make a bet in real time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like, it's something that I know we've always discussed the second screen scenario in terms of like sports and entertainment. But now we're getting there. We are right on the doorstep of, we can make bets from our TV very, very soon.
Let's just go all the way through the looking glass here. Prop bet. Will Emmanuel Clase A be restored to Major League Baseball? Let's just go meta with the whole thing, Ben.
You know, and I mean, one thing too, I mean, I know it's a little bit of a digression from this current point, but one thing I do find super interesting now is the growth of these network, these professional leagues now having fast channels, essentially. The NBA, the NHL has one. Major League Baseball has one. The NFL has one now.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels more like that's another outlet for these companies to make money.
Well, and that's the thing.
It's a way for them just to show more content.
Yeah, like I'm glad you reminded me, because like I don't go there often enough, but like the Pluto Fast Channel for MLB is pretty swank. Like I've seen stuff on there.
It's the
like,
NBA one's pretty good too, also like, NFL channel too.
Yeah.
And again, the real question too is that these networks are important at the end of the day, because there's a lot of people out there who are sports fans or casual sports fans.
Right.
Who will not pay for the service, but hey, you know, I'd use the analogy too. If I'm sitting in my apartment, I have nothing better to do, and I turn on the NFL channel and they're replaying Super Bowl 12, I may watch that.
Well, that's it. That's it. And it's like, when I watch any of these fast channels, like I'm impressed, but it's like, why am I watching stuff here that is significantly better than what you have on your network? Like, I don't understand
really
that.
Interesting.
And cheaper. It's cheaper. You're not having to pay talking heads to sit around to give you blather on the different subjects and whatever, which by the way, to bring it full circle on the ESPN WWE thing here, this is something where I don't know if you know the connection on this or not, but as far as one of the executives right now with TKO, one of the guys who was quoted in the news here making some comments about the new deal with ESPN and everything like that, if you go back 20 years plus to when ESPN really kind of devolved into what it is now, like embrace debate, who's the guy that was the leader of the channel at that time? A gentleman named Mark Shapiro. Where does he work now? TKO. Yeah. So there you go. So, I mean, you know, he's now with the company that influenced 20 years ago what ESPN did with their daytime programming. So it all fits together. I mean, it just couldn't, and I don't say that even in a complimentary sense, but that, like, you know, Pat McAfee's two jobs belong tied together. I don't say that necessarily in a complimentary way, but, you know, it's the same crossover audience. It's a lot of the same kind of stuff. The people that sit there enthralled at what Stephen A. Smith has to say are going to love watching the current WWE product. It just makes sense. So, you know, in that way, that's a thing where, again, you know, the big entities on the side of the streaming entity or the side of the streaming business, they're getting bigger. Another one where one of the ones that's been smaller but still is one of the major services out there is Paramount Plus. In the time since we last recorded, they picked up the exclusive rights to South Park, which, again, with the hot start that South Park is off to for its most recent season here, getting attention and headlines and whatnot. Again, after all these years, staying as relevant as ever, you and I have talked about it over a period of time. Now, like Paramount Plus, there's a reason we don't talk about them a whole heck of a lot, because what they have to offer relative to some of these other ones is kind of lackluster, to be honest with you. I mean, if you love Euro soccer, they've got some offerings that you're going to want to see, or this or that or whatever. But as far as really being on a par with what you get with HBO Max or with the Disney Hulu side or anything like that, it just hasn't stacked up yet. The exclusive rights to South Park, that seems like a step in the right direction anyways.
I would think so, because, and we've discussed this, like Paramount Plus, when it was CBS All Access, was really, I guess the best analogy you can make is kind of what Peacock is trying to do right now, which is they were building 4 to 5 tentpole shows, like the Star Trek reboot, the Twilight Zone reboot. Mm-hmm. They had, you know, the Frasier reboot. They had a bunch of really interesting sort of rebooted type shows, but none of them really sort of clear the mechanism of the streaming industry. So it kind of, it's a companion streaming service, and it feels like they've almost accepted, but they're still producing new content. I know the big pull for a lot of the older generation that probably has Paramount Plus right now is Showtime and a little bit of the NFL that rights that they do have as well. So
yeah,
it's just, I do think stuff get them acquiring more rights to things is big. And we've started to see this now sort of almost like the cross pollination,
right?
These entities now buying other streaming services shows and bringing it over to their network, whether it was canceled early or if it did okay, but they had the opportunity to make another season. So it's just really with Paramount Plus, I feel like there's the tiers of everything. There's the must-have services, the if you need it services, and then the bottom tier, which is within that sort of like Paramount Plus. You know, Peacock is probably there for a handful of people too, even though it has very distinctive shows like Poker Face, Love Island, Twisted Metal. So it's like there are these subscription services that are very niche, and I feel like both with Peacock and that they're starting that niche market is what both are going after, but we're starting to see now that Peacock is even surpassing Paramount Plus.
Yeah, and here's the thing also too, when you're talking about something that is supposed to be a tentpole for it, this is a thing where you'd sent me something on this week, you and I being huge Office fans, the long-awaited, I don't know if it's like a distant kind of spinoff called The Paper about a fictional newspaper in Toledo, because Oscar Nunez, he's playing the same character, I think, right? So that would be...
At least perceptually from the trailer, yes.
Okay, so it's in the tiniest possible way, I guess you would say, a spinoff, if it's the one character in there who shows up.
I would say it's almost like a reboot on some level.
Yeah, reboot, basically.
Reboot, more of a spinoff, but...
Yeah, that envisioning it in a different kind of a way, but to see, again, something where, again, the second life that The Office has had, the way that it took off, first of all, on Netflix, and then I think presumably still on Peacock. There's probably less people that are watching it now, but everyone, like during the pandemic especially, I got into it on, I think, when it was still on Netflix, and to see what kind of an impact that can have there. So, yeah, that's a niche thing for Peacock as well. It's something that starts off, at least initially, on the first tier of these services. And I don't know that it's ever going to grow beyond that, because they seem already to be positioning themselves as like, oh, you can bundle us with these other things once we make deals. Discovery Global now putting together a streaming service, which I was surprised to see. Talk about things that, again, I had thought were going to be redundant. I'd said the same thing about, what do you need HBO Plus and Discovery Plus for? Apparently, Discovery Plus never went away. It just fell off of my radar completely. So I don't know if Discovery Plus now becomes the basis for what this Discovery Global streaming service is going to be, but it's going to be something where the remaining TNT sports rights are going to be one of the things that's made available here. Now, again, we're in a world where that no longer involves the NBA, but it's Big 12, college football and college basketball, a handful of other things like that, a handful of other properties. You got a little bit of NECAR here. You got a little bit of this and that. But, I mean, nothing that is, you know, really, really, really premium level type stuff. So to see where this fits in, and what's interesting is that, you know, they're already positioning it like, oh, well, one of the things you might be able to bundle us with might be HBO Max. And I'm sitting here like, really? For the same kind of stuff that we can already get all in one place through HBO Max? Oh, that's very nice of you to sell us that as a bundle now. So
I mean, and we'll discuss it, Rick, is that HBO Max has been one of the most interesting stories of a streaming service ever created. And again, one of the big news that's come through the week is that they've been purging a lot of content from the platform.
Yeah,
like that's a lot of the Cartoon Network stuff now is gone. They've also purged a little bit in terms of movies and some recent TV shows that just were not successful. So Max is in a weird spot, because when it had the NBA and, you know, like, and you know, it still it's going to have Major League Baseball games, still going to have the NHL. But there was a discussion at one point too, like with Bleacher Report as the add-on, like it felt like they were also trying to build a sports service at some point to sort of rival not necessarily ESPN, but to rival some of these other streamers. But it's clear that David Zaslav made a decision of economically the smart thing to do is that people are going to subscribe to the service no matter if we have content or not. So yeah. That's just part of the scenario for them. And the thing too is, like, the one thing that I know we haven't talked about, and we'll probably talk about this as Disney Plus essentially gets fully subsumed at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot of these streaming services are now having to weigh what they are creating on their own. Because we saw there was like a serious boom from 2016 to 2022 of all these streaming services creating insane amounts of original programming.
Right.
And now you're starting to see a lot of them pare it back. Like Peacock very specifically is probably one of the better narratives to discuss because they essentially purged over 12 different shows in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So they are really sort of on they're on that little teeter of like they have maybe 4 to 6 original shows left. And then outside of these NBA coming in for them in the near future, there's going to be a question for a lot of people that I've seen on like the Peacock Reddit and all these other social media websites of will there be a mass cancellation of Peacock at one point? Mm-hmm. Because if I'm having to pay an exorbitantly higher fee and I don't like sports, why do I need this platform at this time?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. And by the way, I'm glad you reminded me on Discovery Global that, yes, I stand at least partially corrected. They still have MLB. They still have NHL. That's going to come with it. Playoffs for both sports. That's going to come with it every other year to Stanley Cup Final. I would say for the length of those present deals, I don't see any way whatsoever that Discovery Global is going to have the coin to keep these things. But, yeah, for the remainder of the contracts, you're absolutely right. There are some I wouldn't say first tier things because I use that term rather advisedly. NFL, college football, NBA. I don't think we'd even put NASCAR necessarily on that level anymore. So MLB, NHL, whatever, those kind of fall second level. If we just separate out March Madness from the rest of college basketball, maybe that's first tier as well. And that, but that's where, again, and they have the rights to that, I guess, for as long as that deal is in place. But Discovery Global, here's a news bulletin, folks. They're not re-upping on any of these deals. They're about to become a poverty service here without having the big bucks behind them. And that's a thing where, again, what you're bringing up is something where, again, I raised this question with Simon, and he kind of made sense of it to a little bit to me, but I've always believed in the classic model of this thing, going back to really the beginning of when we did our series in May of 2020, that you have the content arm cleaved to the streaming arm, and that you have this big thing here where you're too big to fail if that's the case, because you have these back libraries that people love. You're churning through, making new shows that go up on there. If you're one of the bigger entities, you're going to have a whole bunch of nice sports rights that go with it. So I've always believed in that as a business model. And that's the thing where I think the fact that somewhere along the way, enough, you know, quote unquote, smart people forgot that, hey, startup costs for these things are can be kind of steep. I think that everybody lost their nerve based on the quarterly shareholder numbers the last couple of years. And I'm sure that's where perhaps somebody like FDH Lounge dignitary, original dignitary Chris Galloway would tell me that I'm being economically illiterate because, well, Rick, it has to go by what the shareholder reports are. And, you know, you're only as good as the amount of money that's in there and the amount of shareholder confidence. But they're making moves that I don't think are right for the long term of these businesses. And I understand that a lot of shareholders these days aren't necessarily thinking long term. But if you work there, it's your job to think about it. If you're the CEO, it's your job to think about that. It's your job to think about the next 5, 10 years, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to compare that to myself being pres of an HOA, but I think about stuff that's going to go far beyond how long I'm owning a place here, because that's my job to do so. It's your job to look beyond the horizon. And I'm looking at this like, you know, I don't understand, like, well, we'll just make a deal with this place or that place. Like, we've seen the pendulum move back and forth in the 21st century here. I think the AOL Time Warner, that merger in 2001, that gets held up as, you know, the very bad example of when you have all these things subsumed under one thing and it was too bulky and it was whatever. But then they divested. But then a lot of the ones came back together by the late 2010s, I think it was. So it's like this pendulum just keeps moving back and forth. And I'm a believer in the one end of the pendulum, which is staying big enough to have all of these things so that you're not in the poverty situation of having your hand out trying to make what could be unfavorable deals with other folks for either distribution or content.
Right. And I think one of the real interesting things is the real growth of the industry has really come through original content, essentially.
Yes.
And I feel like that is starting now to shift to sports rights, which is those are things that will create a lot more people. And the thing, too, is like if we look at the streaming numbers overall outside the most popular like shows, like a lot of the stuff that makes a lot of these streaming networks. And I feel like this is what David Zaslav figured out for hit for Max, HBO Max overall, which was that, look, people, we can bid into these rights deals and we can accumulate as much as we can and we can put money into these original pieces of content. But if most people are using these streaming services anyway to go back and watch certain shows that are already bygone, well, then we should really be just fine-tuning the business for that narrative, at least. And we've seen it, too. If you look at some of those just the minutes of streaming numbers outside of a handful of shows, a lot of the older shows, you know, like stuff like Little House on the Prairie, stuff like Perry Mason, are doing really stuff like Twilight Zone on Prime Video and Paramount. Like, things that do really well seem to be these sort of older serial shows that are remembered by a lot of people within that sort of Gen X millennial timeline that we just watch over and over again. And because of that, like, that's why we've seen the growth of essentially live fast TV, essentially, at this point. Because if you're telling me that, you know, at the level of, with the level of amount of content, I'm trying to explain this correctly in my head, Greg. So with the level amount of new original content going down, you're seeing a lot of people now defaulting to watching older content that they already know and love and enjoy. So it's going to be really interesting to see how sort of some of these networks sort of homogenize some of the sort of content and be like, how are we, is it better to be pursuing that new streaming hit that gets more people to pay into us? Or is it better off that we just kind of retain the rights of certain shows that we know will do big numbers no matter what?
Yeah. And that's the whole thing here too, is that, you know, that this is a calculus that's being made. Some of the shows that you're talking about end up on some of these fast services, an entire channel devoted to certain shows on there. I know that a couple of years ago, I have a good friend of mine, I put his mom onto the whole thing of, I think this was on Pluto. They had a Johnny Carson 24/7 channel. And his mom was kind of an older person who didn't get out as much, who loved, you know, Johnny Carson and could just watch that whenever. So that's a thing where, that for that to exist. So the network executives, I think, are figuring out, okay, which of these things belong there? Which of these things belong on a pay service where we can get people to pay to watch them? And that's where it's probably more of an art than a science. But it just is a thing where, again, Disney is one of the last ones, just to kind of bring it full circle here, of where they're trying to be a one-stop shop for a lot of this kind of stuff, which, like I said, that's the business model I still believe in. That's the kind of company that long-term I would have the most confidence in. Peacock, I think, you know, slash NBC Universal, they don't really fit the mold as much because they're doing the same thing Warner Media is doing with sending off a bunch of their cable channels and stuff. So it's like, where, you know, in terms of where they're going to get content for things and how everything's going to kind of flow from there. I don't think anybody has yet answered the question of, for all of the crossover between NBC News and CNBC and MSNBC, what happens when NBC News is completely cleaved from them? I mean, there's going to be a period of time where, much like on the Warner Media side, of where they're still working together in a transitional phase. But what happens at the end of the day? Are these outlets going to be completely bereft of any kind of network TV news connection? I mean, you can survive that way. CNN has, but it's, it goes completely against the model of, again, CNBC, which goes back to, I think, the 80s, and MSNBC, which goes back to 1996. There's always been that kind of tie there. So Disney is really one of the last ones out there that's still holding to this model. Paramount Plus, again, say what you will about them, and I have. They are largely kind of holding to that, although they've also done the thing over the years of, like, selling off some of their shows. I've castigated them for selling off Yellowstone to Peacock. I'm like, for what? you have one of the signature shows anywhere in the Paramount family, not just the network itself, the Paramount Network, but the entire wider thing here, and you sell it off. So a lot of interesting choices continuing to be made. And again, we see, you talked about live sports here, Netflix, Amazon Prime was one of the first ones a couple of years ago to really start going bigger into this kind of stuff here. Apple TV Plus, they've been kind of start and stop on doing stuff. But, you know, again, you're talking about very, very, very deep pockets, especially with the latter two entities. And that's a whole thing, too. That will continue to upend everything else we've talked about. Once you really start, once you start to get Apple TV Plus, or once you start to get Amazon Prime coming in with the full potential of those pocketbooks, everybody else should look out. I keep thinking it's going to happen sooner rather than later. It hasn't, but it won't be indefinitely down the road, Ben. I won't be wrong indefinitely about that.
No, and I mean, one of the big rights that we have, we haven't even talked about, obviously, Formula One is...
Yes.
One of the big ones that is coming up, at least in the United States. I'm not 100% sure in terms of global rights at this time, but at least in terms of the United States rights, I know Netflix was sniffing around, Apple TV's been looking at, Prime Video was also looking at it potentially as well to add to their thing. And it's really interesting because I think at one point in this entire conversation, Rick, all these streaming services were kind of like the additional add-on to an existing service, similar to like, except for Netflix at the time. And now it feels like some of these are full-fledged, you know, cable subscriptions at this point.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be really interesting to see what happens. And again, one thing I know I'll just tack on at the end of this too is like, we also saw Roku decided to launch their own sort of cheap ad-free service called Howdy at $2.99. Mm-hmm. On sort of the baseline that people are willing to always spend a little bit of money if it's ad-free content. So it's going to be really interesting to see how each of these sort of platforms continue to build, especially when you're having to weigh, number one, you know, investors, you also have to weigh subscribers, because we're going to see, especially based on the upcoming economy outlook, will people start to purge some of these subscription services if they're not finding what they want to watch on a daily basis?
Yeah. And again, if the economy goes south, yeah, I mean, the streaming, that's going to be one of the first things to go. Any type of non-essential items don't tend to fare well in a recession. So we'll have to see, because the next 6 to 9 months are going to have a lot to say about that, what the direction's going to be, and that's going to influence a lot of this as well. So is there anything really in the way of recent headlines in the biz that that we didn't get to yet, Ben?
I do not think so. I do think one of the one things that we are going to start to monitor on is obviously Netflix updated their UI recently, completely changed what it looked like. It's going to be really interesting because they are really pushing a lot of AI within that format, better searching, better ways of finding programming through that UI. So to me, it's going to be really interesting to see, because we saw Prime Video did one recently, Disney's did there a couple years past. It's going to be really interesting to see how the use of AI in these streaming services are going to help optimize finding content, or it just discovering content based on the algorithms of your likes when you're on these platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. And the searchability is really going to be key as we move along here, and as far as what makes for, again, the easiest and best experience. That's one of the ways that these services can differentiate themselves. So we'll have to see how all that plays out and then some. But as always, Ben, thank you so much. Great. This has been a wonderful mini series we've been doing here on the show, following the streaming industry and the developments in it. And we'll continue to do so. So we now know, from what I looked up earlier today, like 5 1/4 years and counting of us doing this over a period of time dating back to the pandemic. Really appreciate it as always, Ben Chu. Thank you so much, great FDH Lounge dignitary. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1851.